Welcome to the Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. Larry is the author of over 40 books, the founder of Dove International, a worldwide family of churches and ministries in six continents, and has over 50 years of leadership experience. He and his guests will share inspirational leadership insights from their journey with God. These insights, gleaned from serving leaders in many nations, will transform your life and leadership. For more information on Larry's books and resources, visit LarryKreider.com.
Welcome to the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. Larry Kreider here in the studio with me today are JC and Maria Alzamora from Venezuela originally, right?
That's right.
Glad you guys are here. I was just in South America this week. We're going to talk about leadership, but let's talk about you first. What was it like growing up in Venezuela? You both grew up in the same area?
Very close, actually.
Really?
Caracas, which is the capital.
Yes.
It's a valley and next to a very tall mountain part of the Andes region.
Right.
On the other side is the Caribbean Ocean.
Okay.
So we grew up 10 minutes from each other, and her dad and my pediatrician knew each other.
Okay.
But that's about it.
So
that's
Maria, you came from a medical family?
I do. Yes.
Wow. Are you a doctor?
I wish. I wanted to be one.
Really? Really?
Yes, all my life I wanted to be one.
Wow.
Until I came into ministry and God said, yeah, you're going to be a doctor, but a different kind.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, I'll.
That's happened. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how you get involved in ministry. Let's talk about how you met. I think, was it on college campus somewhere?
Well, actually, we were part of a campus ministry called Maranatha.
Sure, in the Maranatha world.
And so we would have conferences. I think you attended a couple of those.
I did. We were at the same conference, I think.
Yes, we were.
And didn't even know it a few times. Well, in Dallas, Texas, yes.
In that conference in Dallas,
yeah.
I was in the back in a camera at the end of the conference, and I saw Maria, and I had been to Venezuela one time, and God spoke to me, that's going to be your wife, but forget
really?
About it for now. And just serve me. And I was in the Atlanta chapter, and she was in the Caracas chapter.
Okay.
And we saw each other then. That was 1984. We saw each other, long story short, but that's the first time I actually knew or we actually have met.
That's amazing, because I think I was there. 84, I was there. So I was in the room with you when you saw this woman for the first time. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That is amazing. So you came to Christ at a young age or in college, or how did you come to Christ?
Well, I was in high school, and my brothers, my dad sent all of us here to America
right.
for our studies.
Okay.
And they came back, and one of them got saved here in America,
okay.
came back to Venezuela, closed me in a room and said, we have something to tell you. And I was like, what happened? And they preached the gospel to me, and I actually decided to follow Jesus right
wow.
there and there. And that was it.
How old were you?
I was almost 18.
And were they older than you or younger?
Yeah,
older than you.
Yeah, older than
me. They put you
me.
In a room, preached to you about Jesus, and you said, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I'm serving the Lord.
Yep.
And coming out of
well,
here.
That's a way to do it.
Well, I respected my... I'm the youngest of four.
Okay.
I respected my older brothers a lot.
Sure.
So if they said it was so, it was so.
Sure, of course.
No doubt in my mind.
Almost everyone who comes to Christ really comes because of someone that they know, either in their family and relationship with, they trust. In your case, your brother. And to come to Christ.
Yep.
How about you? How did that work for you, JC?
Well, I had actually a person that was in the church with Maria in Caracas. I was dating his sister.
Okay.
And she had gotten saved and through Pat Robertson's 700
really?
Club.
Really? Wow.
Watching TV. And then he asked Maria to pray for her crazy boyfriend. That was me. I was in a frat and doing all kinds of
You were the crazy boyfriend.
Thing.
Uh-huh.
I was an international student up in the New York. And of course, Maranatha Campus Ministry, they targeted international
they
students.
They did. Sure did.
Because they were, you know, to train and send back to their nations. And
yeah, God really used that ministry for a
yeah.
season of time.
So that's how I got, I mean, it's a longer story than that, but
sure.
I came to Christ in a college house church meeting near Georgia Tech in Atlanta, Georgia. On spring break, I wasn't
wow.
even, it wasn't even my school.
Okay, both came to Christ. You knew this would be your wife in the future.
Yeah.
When did you find that out?
3 years later.
3 years later. Wow.
Yeah.
And it happened at a Maranatha meeting also?
Oh, no. I was stubborn, okay? I was very stubborn. I had had a relationship in the past. God said, this is not the guy, cut it off. I did not like that. And I fought the Lord for a little bit. And then I said, okay, let's do this. And I said, God, this thing about relationship is too hard. I'm not going to be distracted by it. And I'm going to run hard after you. And if you ever have anybody that I need to marry, you have to take a bat and just use it on my head. That's how determined I was. It's like crazy. And that's what I did. I started to run after God. And I developed such a beautiful relationship with Jesus. I said, God, I need no man.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally. And then a prophet came by and said, I think God is trying to get to your sister. He told my brother. And he's like, yes, man, everybody around knows and even knows the guy, but she ain't hearing. My brother had a dream about JC.
Really?
Yeah. The person that discipled me knew it was JC. And I'm like, I don't know. Is God speaking to you? No. No. Very general about marriage. And a prophet had to come and say, listen, you need to pray. And I did. And in that prayer, I was trembling. And I said, God, what the heck is this?
Yeah.
And he said, you remember that guy that praised you after you were speaking at church? That's the one kind of thing inside of me. And that was it.
Wow. So she got the revelation, JC, and it happened.
I did.
3 years later. I'm a hard taster.
So you both came to Christ. You're both involved in Maranatha. Mm-hmm. Were you involved in leadership in Maranatha at all?
I was, but we were in different chaps. So she was in Caracas.
Right, in Venezuela.
So her and her brother pastored the church there together. And they were single.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they grew that church. When I first went down there, it was 300 people. I mean, they were doing a wonderful job. Wow. Her with the ladies and Enrique with the guys. And I was in Atlanta, where a lot of the guys that would come through, and I was just part of the team, but I was going to university, so we didn't know any better. You got saved, you were in ministry. Right. You know, that was Bob's message. You know, you got saved, you're already in full-time ministry.
Right.
And so we were birthing campus chapters.
Sure.
And then later on, I came on staff, raised support, YWAM style. And we didn't realize that it was not normal to be after sinners and planting churches. It was later on that I realized not everybody's doing that in church. I mean, we just thought that was, and that was part of Bob's gift, really, to all of us. Mm-hmm. He just had us believing as a bunch of teenagers and early 20 people that we could just take over the world just by preaching the gospel. So
we love the zeal of Maranatha, and that's why we had Maranatha leaders come here and help us. You know, Bob and Rose Weiner, Rice Brooks and Jody came many, many, many times. You know, Joe Smith and Katie, I mean, on and on. And so we have an impartation here. And every movement has their pros and cons, obviously.
Yeah.
And I know there's not a Maranatha movement today, but there are many churches birthed out of Maranatha. They're doing well today.
Yes.
And thank God for a lot of the good things that did happen. But you're right. You're right. Maranatha, Bob and Rose Weiner didn't give a lot of options. Like you come to Jesus, you're in the kingdom, full time ministry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And we grew from that, and our leadership. It was called Maranatha. The MLTS is Maranatha Leadership Training.
Yep, MLTS. And
so really, we would all come, 5,000 people from around the world, ravenous.
Yeah.
And Bob had a way to just exhort us. We were just hungry. So everybody, the who's who, would come. And a lot of the impartations we had as leaders came from those concentrated, small, 3-day, 4-day trips that we took, both in the extra local and the regional. It was remarkable, actually. Yeah. And you birthed into this, so you think that's normal, right?
Exactly. Yeah, there were 2 or 3 years. We took probably over 100 of our leaders to MLTS just to learn and grow, because we loved the fire of God that was there. We loved the dedication to Jesus and making disciples and planting churches. Yeah. And I think God used that to help us today to be a church planting movement that we are, because a lot was sown into us through Maranatha in those early days. Hi, Larry Kreider here. Before we continue with the episode, I want to announce my new segment, Ask Larry. It premieres in season 3 of the podcast. I want to hear from you. Starting next season, I'll be answering your leadership questions and covering the leadership topics that you want to hear about. To submit your questions, visit the show notes and click the link below. And as always, thank you for listening. Now, let's get back to the episode.
His influence was a little wider than our ministry.
It was.
And because even the Bishop Boone, Wellington Boone, from, and the whole new generation movement in the traditional African American churches, they all came, you know. It's an interesting mix of how it all came together.
Yeah.
But I found that out much later.
Yeah. So. What are some things you wish you would have known looking back when you started? You know, you think, well, you know, we think I probably learned that. But what are some things when you look back, think, man, I wish I would have known this and this and this? Because you've been involved in leadership now for many years, different parts of the world, different parts of USA. Weren't you in Massachusetts for a while?
Yeah, we were. I got saved in Atlanta. So I was in, in Georgia for a while. Then we moved to Indiana.
Okay.
Right near Chicago.
Okay.
Then we were in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, okay.
And then Connecticut. My son went to University of Connecticut, so we moved there. And of course, I was traveling by then quite a bit. So I really just needed an airport. Mm-hmm. And then we came with local church. We always believed that local church was important in our just as a family.
Sure.
So, and then from there, we moved to Lancaster.
Right. Well, what are some things that you wish you would have known way back in those days, in those early days? You know, can you think of anything you think, wow?
Well, I think in Maranatha especially, we knew about generals. I think you and I have talked about this.
Yes.
But the I think later on, I realized that the kingdom of God was more family than it was an army.
Right.
So generals had to take the clothing of fathers. Mm-hmm. And then in our journey, and this is how Maria and I got connected, I very much thought fathers were incomplete in a family without mothers.
Uh-huh.
And so my my theology on women involved in leadership shifted from the beginning because my mom had been a diplomat.
Wow.
And so I knew, and she was a CEO of our own company. And you know, she had you can always nitpick your parents,
sure,
but she was a quite remarkable Latin woman, Venezuelan woman in her time. So I think if we would have realized that we were more family and would have had a different approach to leadership and understood the seasons of your children, understood the seasons of where things were at, I think we would have been able to extend Maranatha many more years.
Mm-hmm. Anything you'd want to offer here on this? What do you wish you would have known?
Well, yes, I definitely think that because of the emphasis being on more, yes, sir, general, we're in the army of God, we didn't have a lot of buy-in. So there is a lot of things that are created in the heart and in the soul of people that are following. That are following because dad or mom said so. But now I am of age where I can sit at a table and talk to you and let's talk about it. And there was not much talk about it.
Right.
So of course the kid grows up very frustrated and says, you know what, I'm leaving. Yeah. I'm gonna go to another home where I can do my own thing.
Right, right.
And that is definitely something that was going on not only in our midst, but probably because of the discipleship movement that we came from.
Right.
That it was very much like that. Yep. It was like, you know
across
what, you don't know how to hear God. Let me hear God for you.
Yeah, and that never works. No.
Never works.
No.
Oh my gosh, no.
No. You know, a man of God told me once that in the church in general, it's about 20% army and 80% family. Yeah. And I think that's true. You got the evangelists, the apostles, you know, those who are thinking army, let's build around the world, you know. But most people, it's like, how can I help somebody else grow in the Lord? I help my children grow in the Lord. How can I help the people in my life group grow in the Lord or whatever? And which is more family? It's really both. But
it's so funny you say that because in our ministry early on, the pastor and the teacher were seen as lower gifts.
Yeah, which is
but
crazy.
But really, shepherds, at what point do you do without them? I mean, they're the ones
they're
that you're leading life.
Yeah.
So we champion these higher gifts, quote unquote, because they were the one out in front of people. But actually, it was those guys that would glue family together, keep home, create atmospheres of belonging.
Yeah.
We didn't understand that. Yeah. And I, going back to it, I say, okay, you know, when we were able to do that, we had a lot more success.
Yeah. I think something that helped me personally was I married a shepherd.
Ah.
My wife's a shepherd. So that really helped me, even though that wasn't my primary gift. I love people, but I wasn't necessarily a strong pastor. But Laverne always has been, and that really, really helped me process. Yeah. Now, I talked about the prophetic. How did you know that? Because you travel around the world. How did you begin to do that? And how did you know you were a prophet?
Wow. Well, in a nutshell, trial and error at first, because when we got started, there was not a lot of material there was Bill Hammond's experiences, then there were the Kansas City Prophets,
that's right.
Then there were the Latter Day, before that there were the Latter Day guys, the restoration of the gifts. So I mean, I've been around for 39 years this year, Maria over 40. Mm-hmm. So we saw the beginning of the restoration of many of those things. And I would just get information about people. I didn't even call it prophetic. I didn't even know it was right or wrong. And then I started learning models. So I would hear people say, "Thus says the Lord." And, you know, you start trying to, your ego and your pride get in the way of your ministry.
Right.
And I thank God for Maria, because Maria's always, in our relationship, she's always been the one that says, "So how does that apply to the everyday?"
Oh, that sounds like my wife.
Because if you get all this revelation, you don't have love and you put it into practice. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciated that about her. But I think people started calling me out on it and asking me to minister, asking me to join prophetic presbyteries, stuff like little gatherings where they wanted us to pray for people. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was on the campus all the time. So we used it on the campus in evangelism constantly.
Yeah.
And so it just developed over time. And then a bunch of literature started happening. Yeah. And then that helped a lot.
You mentioned prophetic presbytery. I mean, I didn't even know what that was probably 40 years ago. And, you know, obviously for those who've never heard this, again, we get people from probably 150 nations who are listening to this.
Right.
And prophetic presbytery basically is a group of prophets or people with prophetic gifts who come together who prophesy over a person or a couple or a ministry or whatever. And it's been powerful. And we first heard about this. We went to the West Coast to Dick Iverson. Remember Dick?
Yes, sure.
So we went there. They had prophetic presbytery, some of those end time prophets from the West Coast in Canada. They came in. We just sat and listened and said, "How do you do this?" Because we all learn from each other. What about you? Anything you want to add to this whole process? I mean, you're talking about the prophet, and you've been known as a prophet. Of course, you're involved in many gifts. Which kinds of gifts would you say the Lord used you in, Maria?
I think my strongest would be prophetic teaching.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it is like I just get these downloads. Mm. In seasons, and I just speak them, and it's what we need at the time is very unique to me. So in that sense, I'm prophetic. When I hang around him or I travel with him, I definitely get a bit of his mantle, and I can prophesy.
Sure, sure.
And he's put me in like, okay, you get in a line, she's going to prophesy over all of you. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And it just happens.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing.
Beautiful.
To me to be under that.
Yeah.
But I consider myself also a very pastoral. I understand all the gifts since I've been, I have touched all of those offices at seasons in my life. And I believe I am like a coach. Mm. I consider myself like a coach.
Good.
What is that exactly? I'm not sure. But I have an ability, God-given ability, to help discern who you are.
Mm.
And I have been learning this throughout my life. And
beautiful.
God has given me all kinds of tools to do this. So when people are going into a very difficult time, not knowing what to do, that's when I flourish, which is wonderful. That's why I did that in the school in Ephrata.
Yep.
And it was quite helpful. for kids, especially kids that have so many different scenarios in front of them and, you know, so many possibilities. Mm-hmm. What do I do? Do I go missions? Do this, do that? And there's so many. It's like going into a cereal aisle at the supermarket. It's like, you kidding me? What? There's too much. So I go there. I go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you guys are an amazing team. You travel a lot, JC. I mean, do you travel together sometimes also?
Yeah, we have. Right now, she has been more of a marketplace because she's been, you know, birthing a real estate business. And I'm traveling less. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we used to travel a lot together. And still, when Nick was younger, I didn't travel what I travel now.
Sure, sure.
But now, you know, he's a grown man.
Yeah.
I want to say another thing she just failed to mention was that she's a very worship, prayer, intercessor as a strength. And that's how her and I, we've functioned a lot closer in houses of prayer, in worship scenarios.
Beautiful.
And even in Gateway over here, we did that a lot when we ran the school. Our strength comes from the presence of God and any prophetic ministry.
Right.
You don't need to be an intercessor to be a prophetic, but if you want to be prophetic, you must be an intercessor. You must love the presence more than the gift, or you'll be lost in it.
Right, right. You mentioned Gateway House of Prayer, part of Effort Community Church and HarvestNet. Of course, Merle Shank started the HarvestNet School of Supernatural Ministry. You came in, you led HarvestNet School of Supernatural Ministry, and you moved here to do that. And you work with so many different groups, so many different organizations, so many different ministries. I know you have a heart for disciple-making movements. What's the disciple-making movement and how are you involved in that?
It's interesting because Jesus and even Luke, all the way to Acts, they talk about disciples and disciple-making.
Yes.
But from Acts on, the epistles, they don't mention the word disciple again.
Mm.
They talk about sons and saints and heirs and ambassadors. So there is a growth where you lay foundation. And the misnomer before was there were certain people that could do this and others can't. And and really what has shifted, in my view, is that everyone can train and equip one. Mm-hmm. Everyone can do this.
Totally.
And so there's not a sense of superiority of gift or calling. No, I mean, every man can be the head of his household.
Right.
The English say that every man's home is their castle, you know.
Right.
It's kind of, I think that that's the primary thing that everyday individuals with the Holy Spirit inside can do extraordinary things by doing the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And the ordinary is just loving people where they're
at. Exactly.
And then you begin to, instead of shoving the Bible down their throat, you begin to show and tell.
Mm-hmm.
See, we love to tell and then show, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But showing them love, serving them, being with them, walking through difficult situation. We just lived through some difficult things. People in Turkey are living some terrible thing. Afghanistan.
Right.
So some of the people in our own country in Venezuela, they care more about what we do than what we say. They already know what we carry or what we have.
Right.
But when you align yourself with them in their everyday, and then in a way you suffer with them through that empathy does more for discipleship than just the plain gospel. So I'm not, obviously you have to put the truths of God in there.
Yeah.
But that relationship, it's of a higher value than the information that's going to help them and God's going to breathe on. And so that's been our experience, certainly in the discipleship making movement. And for us as ministers, and we've been married 33 years. So we've done a lot of ministry things and trained a lot of people and that kind of thing.
The two of you carry so much. I mean, you get the prophetic ministry, you know, you carry so much, you have so much experience over the years. If somebody listening here says, I'd love to have JC and or Maria come to our church or our ministry, whatever, we're going to put on the show notes a way that they can get a hold of you. They'll be all right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. That way, if they want to make further contact, they could do that. Now, if there's a younger leader sitting here right now, with us right now, and says, what's one thing I should know? What's one thing I should be aware of in leadership? as I grow to the place that you're at today, what would you tell them?
You got to, first of all, know yourself.
Yeah.
First and foremost, get to know yourself. And I say this because having been so long in ministry, I have seen that leadership wants to emanate from others that are good in what they do.
Boy, that's really good. That's really good.
But the thing is that they're good at what they do because they somewhat have met themselves and know themselves and use what God has given them very particularly.
Beautiful.
And they produce out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is like, for example, in one pastoral church, we were always like, we're not growing, we should do this, we should do that. And they said, well, we're going to read this book, we're going to read this book. And I was always a little bit frustrated with that. Why? Because if you always read a book, good book that has had tremendous influence, it always starts by something like, the Lord told me, or I was here and all of a sudden it dawned on me that, and there's the book.
Right.
So why not start there?
Right.
So my thing is that you will become incredible when you know who you are.
That's so good.
And you receive yourself, embrace yourself, and then feed that which is already in you. It's going to be magnetic. And then at the same time, a good leader, in my view,
yes,
will do the same to the other.
Right.
It's like, so tell me, what is God telling you?
Beautiful.
What is inside of you? Tell me about your dreams. What excites you? What turns you on?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go there. And how can you use that to influence others?
Beautiful. Wow. JC,
I got that.
You married a very wise woman. You know that.
Yeah, it's very powerful. I'll take the other side, which is the other addition to that is, I think for a younger leader, because you have so many insecurities and so many, you're still learning who you are. You need good mentors.
Mm-hmm.
I learned without mentoring in many aspects, although I had some great mentors, but never in my gift.
Mm-hmm.
My gift, I had to learn from doing it, from later on reading about it. But I had, you and I know Alan Vincent.
Sure.
I had Bob Weiner.
Yeah.
You know, so there were things that they put in me that there was an edge. But I didn't have speed dial relationship with these guys.
Right.
Although I traveled with both some, more with Alan over the years, and I know his family more.
Sure.
But I got to say that a good, being able to be raised up with healthy, I think you can do that much better now because there's a lot more info, but healthier family context in the spirit, I mean, healthier leadership. That is going to go a long way because then it won't just be you replicating what you saw. It's like you are in an environment where you find out who you are and become all that God has called you to be. Because sooner or later, as your kids grow up, you've got to let them be who they are.
Exactly.
You can let them shape them after your own kind. God made them after his kind.
That's both natural kids and spiritual kids.
Correct.
There you go. I was going to go there. It's like in a family. It's like a kid will imitate his dad. And that is totally fine and proper at that age. It's like I used to imitate all kinds of people. And that was proper and fine. And it gave fruit. But it was a come when you start growing. It's like, okay, I'm not them. That's now I have to become me.
Yes.
And that's, you know, a process of growth that will always grow to this day and
beautiful
until.
Any last minute wisdom before we sign off today?
I would say fall in love with the presence of God.
Mm.
If you don't do that, that has to be the preeminent reality. Everything, leadership comes from the great leader.
Yes.
And so he puts you together.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you fall in love with him, and then again, it's not just the concept of him, but the person of Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the one that was there before our beginning.
That's right.
And if you can do that, he'll take you to worlds. He'll take you to places. He'll teach you how to navigate the vastness of his realms in the heavenlies. Mm-hmm. That you'll find then tremendous strength, vision, wisdom. He'll lead you to where to get the wisdom to live your life. But I say this all the time. Fall in love with Jesus and never recover. You know, it's like that would be my final wisdom.
So good. Final wisdom from you, Maria.
I would say be a good follower.
Good. Good. Be a good follower.
You'll be a great leader.
That's right.
Because you'll have the experience.
So good. You guys have so much inside you. Wow, there's so many gems inside you for leadership. You learned so much over the years, and you've been a great blessing to so many people, and you've just begun. There's so many more places in the world you haven't been to yet you're going to be getting to as God continues to use you to see the kingdom grow and kingdom built in people and through people. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today for the Larry Carter Leadership Podcast. And thank you, JC and Maria Alzamora. This has been fun having you.
Yes.
And we'll see all of you back next week. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Larry Crider's Leadership Podcast. If you want more information about any of Larry's books, daily devotionals, small group resources, or any other teachings, go to LarryCrider.com.